54-year-old Thomas Madole, a village public safety officer in the village of Manicotic near Dillingham, was shot and killed in the line of duty yesterday. Director of the Alaska State Troopers, Colonel Keith Millard, calls it tremendously tragic.
It deeply saddens me to have to say that at about 4 o'clock p.m., Alaska State Troopers out of Dillingham received a report of gunshots in the community of Manicotic. Unable to get a hold of the VPSO in the community, state troopers responded and discovered 54-year-old village public safety officer Thomas Madole dead outside of a residence from an apparent gunshot wound.
Arrested was 42-year-old Leroy B. Dick Jr. of Manicotic. Dick was picked up near the scene of the crime and is in custody in Dillingham, facing first-degree murder charges. According to troopers, VPSO Madole was making a call at Dick's residence on official business, but details about what happened after that have not been released yet. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation and the state troopers are continuing with the investigation at the scene. VPSO Madole had been assigned to Manicotic since 2011. He's remembered by community members and fellow law enforcement as being kind, respected, and professional. According to Colonel Millard, the last time a VPSO was killed in the line of duty was 1986. VPSOs operate unarmed, typically in communities without police or state troopers. Millard says they play a crucial role in the state's law enforcement.
What the village public safety officer brings to a community is continuity in the public safety. Someone that the community is able to build a relationship with and come to trust. Likewise, the Alaska State Troopers, we wouldn't be able to do what we do if we didn't have the support of fine professionals like VPSO Madole.
Colonel Millard says VPSO Madole's body will travel under escort from now until a funeral is held. Madole is survived by a wife in Missouri and a son in Bethel. A healthcare organization with thousands of patients in Southeast Alaska expects a massive hit to its budget. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SERCH, for short, says it's the result of federal spending cuts known as sequestration. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more on the story.
SERCH Chief Executive Charles Clement says his organization is bracing for a $3.5 million budget cut over the next 6 months. He adds, quote, "There is no possible way for SERCH to absorb this amount of reduction." Clement says the reduced funding is largely because of sequestration, which went into effect on March 1st when Congress could not reach an agreement on the nation's budget. SERCH receives a large percentage of its funding from the federal government. Clement writes that he's traveling this week to meet with the Indian Health Service and other tribal health organizations about sequestration, and he says SERCH executives are working with the board of directors to figure out what to do. He writes in an email, quote, "What I can tell you is that budget changes of this magnitude are beyond my authority to decide," unquote. Clement says nothing has been decided so far, but that difficult decisions are on the way. With more than 900 employees, SERCH is Southeast Alaska's largest private employer. It provides health care services to Alaska Natives and other beneficiaries at its hospital campus in Sitka and through providers in Juneau. It also works in smaller communities throughout the Panhandle. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Sequestration will have less of an impact on the Coast Guard in Alaska than elsewhere in the country. That's the word from Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, who's in charge of the Coast Guard's 17th District, which encompasses the entire state. Ostebo says the Coast Guard is in high demand as activity picks up in Alaska, especially with offshore oil development.
All of that is more marine trade. All that is more marine environmental responsibility work for the Coast Guard. It's going to require the Coast Guard and Coast Guard aviation assets to have a presence up on the North Slope, and Kodiak's making preparations to be up there in a less capacity than we were last year, but more than we have been traditionally.
Ostebo says that's the good news. The bad news is that sequestration has created uncertainty in the budget. Tuition assistance for Coast Guard personnel is gone. Improvements for Coast Guard housing in Sitka are on hold. A request to add a fourth helicopter in Sitka will have to wait as well. And Ostebo says there are other uncertainties.
We've got some icebreaker issues. We're supposed to have two icebreakers this summer up here, both the Star and Healy. We're going to come up. Those, whether they show up or not, is now of great debate. Just fueling those ships is millions of dollars. You've got a 1.5 million gallons capable on Polar Star at $4 a gallon. Pretty expensive to fill it up. So we're trying to figure out how best to use that or whether we will use it at all this year in the Arctic.
But Ostebo says District 17 paid some bills early and put itself in a pretty good place to weather budget cuts. He says the core missions of the Coast Guard, from rescues to navigational aid maintenance to vessel safety, will not change. The admiral made his comments at an award ceremony in Sitka last week. Here in Juneau, the Bill Ray Center is up for sale. The University of Alaska is soliciting offers on the downtown property that includes the classroom and office building on F Street and the parking lot across the street. The properties will be sold together. They will not be sold separately. In a short notice circulated yesterday, the university says they intend to sell as is at or above fair market value. The two-story Bill Ray Center includes 22,000 square feet, while the parking lot is about 38,000 square feet. University officials declined to immediately comment or answer questions about the sale. Offers are due by April 22nd. Legislation that would overhaul the state's oil tax system has been moving its way through the state Senate, and yesterday the bill landed on the floor. The current version raises the base tax while giving companies a credit for every barrel of oil they produce, but it also gets rid of a mechanism that raises taxes when oil prices are high. The overall effect is to bring down taxes on oil companies with the goal of prompting some production. While there wasn't a formal debate on the bill, the small Democratic minority took advantage of the opportunity to get answers on what the changes would do to the state treasury. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez has more on the story.
It took an hour before the Senate even decided to swap out Governor Sean Parnell's original proposal for a version that legislators had revised over the course of weeks. Most of the time, adopting a committee substitute is a simple matter of process, but Democrats used the move to pepper the majority with questions about how the bill worked and what the ultimate fiscal impact would be. It started after Senators Kevin Meyer and Peter Michicki, Republicans who work for ConocoPhillips, offered to recuse themselves from voting because of a perceived conflict of interest. After they were overruled, Senator Johnny Ellis of Anchorage wanted to know something basic about how different versions of the bill compared to each other. Then, Senator Hollis French, also of Anchorage, asked about a provision that would lower the base tax rate by 2% after 2016. French wanted to know whether that cut was automatic or if it was tied to production. Senator Kevin Meyer explained that the bill should have the impact of encouraging more oil production. French wasn't satisfied with that answer.
But I didn't hear what part of the bill does that. Is there a section in the bill that does that, or is it simply a wish and a hope that they'll do as we ask?
Yeah, brief at ease.
Minority members asked question after question about how tax credits for new oil in old fields would work, how a credit to companies who manufacture equipment used for oil production would be applied, and so on. After almost every question, Senate President Charlie Huggins, a Wasilla Republican, would rap his gavel for an at ease so those carrying the bill could get answers from aides and administration staff. There were nearly a dozen breaks in total. At times, Democrats' questions went beyond the bill's mechanics and bordered on political statements. Without the numbers or political clout to push their own oil tax bill through, the minority has been on an aggressive public relations campaign to drum up opposition to the bill, which they argue will cost the state billions of dollars in lost revenue. Senator Bill Willikowski of Anchorage has been an especially vocal critic of bringing down oil taxes, and he expressed concern that the bill under consideration didn't generate enough revenue for the state when oil prices are low.
What are we doing in this bill to protect Alaskans at the low end? What's the difference between the resources version and the finance version? I want to know a number. I want to know how much more, less, or the same this is compared to ACES and compared to the resources version. If I can't get an answer, say I can't get an answer. Say I don't know.
Members of both the minority and the majority are expected to offer changes. A vote could come during the same session, and if it passes, the bill will then go to the House for consideration. In Juneau, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.